Okay, it's the 10th of February, and I'm falling apart, folks. Getting old, but now I got a cold. Meanwhile, I'm bouncing around slowly. The assignments for Chapter 1 are due. The short-term investments, the treasurydirect.gov. A couple of people in the online class sent me emails. How do you get the how do you get the treasury bills? You got to look for auction results. They don't say rates. They just say auction results. And who offered? Well, that's the treasury. Then we should, tentative, a week late, have an exam this coming, not this Thursday, but next Thursday. We'll talk about it more on Thursday and then Tuesday. But who knows? I might be out again. I apologize. We started discussing the fees of mutual funds, and we're going to continue with that. But first, we need a good joke. Anybody got a good joke? Nobody has a good joke? Yeah, okay, let's hear. Okay, you can't. Okay, you can't. Okay, it's not going to create a hostile environment.
No.
Let's hear.
You said, how do you fit a full-size elephant in a Safeway bag?
You open up the bag and put the elephant in.
No, you have to take the S out of safe and the F out of way.
Take the S out of safe and the F out of...
Out of way.
I get it. There is no F in way.
Oh, there is no everyone. Well, that's a joke for kids. I mean, like, how do you put it out? This kid, like, 1 year, because about five or six, they still haven't been able to figure out double entendres. They can't get the double meanings. They're so literal. So you say, how do you put an elephant in a refrigerator? And they go, I don't know. You say, you open up the refrigerator, put the elephant in, and close the door. And they go, oh. And they say, how do you put a giraffe in the refrigerator? And they go, you open up the door, put the giraffe in, and close the door. You say, no, you forgot to take the elephant out. Because they can't get double entendre. They're not there yet. In second grade, in third grade, that's when they start getting them. All right, so how are we doing? Thank you. Thank you, Isaiah. We have a bit of a mixed bag here. Look at Procter & Gamble and Philip Morris. That's what we get for buying a tobacco company. But First Solar and Apple's on a tear. So we're up about 1%. Not bad, not bad. Could be worse. Any ideas, any thoughts, any criticisms? Are we going to go to hell for buying Philip Morris? Probably. Okay. Now, where were we? We were right here. We had gone through the annual operating expenses and describe those, and I know they're boring, they're tedious, but you're an expert, you need to know this. And then we discuss trading costs, the different types of load and no load funds, and we said, oh my goodness, why did they do this? To make sure you don't understand what the hell's going on. And then we took a look, we were right here, as we looked at, this is where we ended, right? We were looking at a single company. This is a mutual fund. It's a fairly large one. It's been around for a long time in one form or another since 1926. So it was started by one of the people who started Merrill Lynch. It's called Fundamental Investors, and we'll discuss what fundamental analysis is later on in a few weeks when we get to stocks. But they have the Class A shares, B shares, and C shares. The A shares have an upfront fee of 5.75%. This is where we were, right? Right, and did we get through all three of them? No, we just got the first one. We got the Class A shares. Your broker shows you this mutual fund and says, you know, I really recommend this. I own it. I think it's a good fund. It's been around for a long time. It's done well in good times and bad. But every $50 you put in, they're going to take $2.88. Now, some of that goes to the mutual fund company. The vast majority of it goes to the brokerage firm, and then the brokerage firm cuts a piece of it for the commission for the broker. You put in $100. You know, if you don't, can't do it in your head, what's 5.75% of $100? $5.75. $1,000? $57.50. $10,000? $5.75. $100,000? Not nothing. I got to this. What's happening is once you start reaching, in this case, 25,000, the percentage starts going down. And we'll see that breakpoint. We'll see that breakpoint in a slide further on. So they're obviously trying to attract more money. They like high net worth individuals. And brokers sometimes won't even talk to people who want to put $50 a month away, which to me is outrageous, because they're the people who need it. They're the people who need to put money away. The people who got plenty of money, what are they getting to worry about? And then, in perpetuity, you're going to get charged 25 cents for the people in the top hats, the people making the decisions about whether you should buy or sell, whether they should buy or sell stock on your behalf. And then the distribution and the service fees, also known as the 12B1 fees, are 24 cents. The other expenses, the lights, the janitors, the accounting, the website, all the other things, are 14 cents. So forever, as long as you own this mutual fund, now it bounces up and down a little bit depending on the mutual fund, but they're going to charge you 63 cents for every $100 you have in the account. Now, does that sound like a lot of money? No? Well, by industry standards, that's on the low side, historically. By industry standards, that's on the low side. But you go to your broker, and you say, Ms. Broker, Mr. Broker, you know, I don't really want to pay that upfront fee. I don't want to pay that. Turn those things off. I don't want to pay that upfront fee. Oh, that's your chair, right? Your chair yelling at you. I don't want to pay that upfront fee. So what does your broker say? Anybody know? No? No problem. Sit down. There's always no problem. Sit down. For you, we have the Class B shares. You see, there's no upfront fee, but there's a potential back end fee. Wait a minute, Ms. Broker. What difference does it make if I pay the upfront fee or the back? Relax. Relax. You see, the Class B shares have what is called a contingent. Did we get to this? Deferred sales charge, which is a great name, contingent. I love the word contingent. CDSC, which in this case starts out at 5% and then goes down to 4, 3, 2, 1, and finally, after 6 years, you don't pay any sales charge. Now you're in it. Whoa! Excuse me. You're in it for the long term, right, Mr. and Mrs. John Q., public investor? You aren't going to be trading mutual funds all day long. You're going to buy and hold this mutual fund, right? Oh, yes, Ms. Broker, we were in it for the long run. So you're not going to pay any sales charge, assuming you leave the money in there for 6 years. Sound reasonable? Okay. The management fee is 25 cents for every $100. Well, that's the same as the A shares. But what happened? What did they do from the Class A shares or the Class B shares? What happened here?
They
raised the distribution fee. You see that?
Yeah.
So what they essentially did is amortize. And if you don't like that word, it's just a fancy way of saying stretched. They stretched out the one-time upfront payment into, you know, 8, because after 8 years, these things, that goes away and becomes the A shares. The other companies, it's 4 years, 6 years. It depends on the company. The other expenses are basically the same. So what they're going to do is for 8 years, they're going to charge you $1.39 per every $100 you have in the account. You understand? They're going to get you, right? You're going to pay for it one way or the other if you go with a load fund. So you go to your broker and you say to your broker, I don't like to pay an upfront fee. And, you know, who knows? Maybe I do want to move it out in a couple of years. So I don't want to pay that back end fee either. And what does your broker say? Everyone should say, no problem. See, it makes it go faster. It makes me feel better. What does your broker say?
No problem.
And you're getting used. You're getting in practice for when you have to tell your clients, no problem, sit down. Don't go away. We got you to get you to sign. For you, we have the broker note. Oh, I'm not supposed to say that anymore. We have the Class C shares. They used to be called broker no load, but the SEC doesn't allow them anymore because the 12B1 fee is greater than 0.25%. Huh? Well, there's no upfront fee. There's a 1% back-end fee if you take the money out within a year, but you're not going to do that. Don't do it. You shouldn't do it. It's a mutual fund. You've made a decision. Hold on to it for the long term. The 25 cents is the management fee. There's the dollar, the 12B1 fee, for 10 years. And then 18 cents for other expenses. So now we're up to $1.43 for 10 years. And then it goes down. You with me? So you go to your broker and you say, I don't want upfront fees. I don't want back-end fees. I want low. Yes, George. Not the numbers, but you don't have to know the numbers, but you have to know what Class A, Class B, Class C, Class F and I, and the no-load funds. You have to know those classes. I'm going to show you there's more than that, or more than that. And I forgot my ABCDs. Poopy. But bring out your ABCDs if you have them, because I'm going to bug you at the end. You don't have to know the numbers. Don't memorize the numbers for fundamental investors and Alliance Large Cap Growth Fund. But yes?
On the Class C, are they all 10 years?
No, every company is different. Every company sets their fee schedule differently. Some don't keep it in perpetuity. It stays that way forever. This company lets it goes for 10 years. And others do. No. You just have to understand how the shares work. And you don't have to memorize every mutual fund that's up here. Remember, there are thousands of mutual funds. You just have to identify different share classes. And we'll show you some questions that will be very similar to what's on the exam after we're done. All right? So stick with us. So now, you go to your broker. I don't want to pay an upfront fee. I don't want to pay a back-end fee. I want low annual operating expenses. And what does your broker say?
No problem.
You're not all doing it. Don't you want to be brokers and screw? I service your clients. I don't want an upfront fee. I don't want a back end fee. I want lower annual operating expenses.
No.
For you, we have the Class F shares, sometimes called FI or I shares for investment advisor, financial investment advisor. These have two classes, so we're looking at F2. No upfront fee, no back end fee, no 12B1 fee. So 41 cents, not bad. And this is a good mutual fund, right, Ms. Broker? Oh, yes, it's been around for a long time. It's done well in good times and bad. I want to sign up. And your broker says,
we're going to charge an extra 1 or 2% every year for that.
What was that, Ms. Broker? What did you say?
We're going to charge you an extra 1 or 2% every year for the rest of your life.
You see, these financial investment advisor shares come with a wrap account, sometimes called wrap, not R-A-P as in trap music, but wrap account, or sometimes called a wealth management account. Ooh, we're not your brokers. No, we're your wealth managers. And for the privilege of having us manage your wealth, we will tack on anywhere from 1% to 2% per year for the rest of the time you're with us. But we'll send you a bottle of wine on your birthday and take you golfing and schmooze with you, assuming you have $500,000 or $1 million to invest. If you got $50 a month, we're not interested in you. Do you understand? That's a good question. Add a 1 or a 2 here. Yeah. Now, it can go lower than that, but I've usually seen 1 to 2%. In fact, I have a little story. Yes, George?
So what kind of people do you invest in? Like the older people?
Dumb people. I'm sorry. Uninformed people. People who haven't taken Business 123. People have a lot of money and think they're being treated really well because they're being taken out to golfing and steakhouse and getting a bottle of wine sent to their Meryl Stench and Morgan Stupid. I don't have an axe to grind, really, folks. I don't have. I apologize on behalf of my industry because we don't always do things that are in your best interest. We are not required, brokers, that's Series 7 registered representatives. We are not required to have a fiduciary interest in your account. What does that mean? That means we put your financial interest above ours. Brokers are not required to do that. Life insurance agents are not required to do that. We can if we want to, and I tell my clients that I do. I treat your money as if it's mine, and I don't mean I try to steal it. I would not sell anything to you that I wouldn't buy myself, and I certainly wouldn't want to do this. One guy came in, he's from a very wealthy family. He showed me the brokerage statement, $12 million account. They were charging about $12,000 a month to manage the account. Yeah, I know. And when I pointed it out to them, I said, does your family know this? They go, no. Wells Fargo Advisors. Okay, fine. So you hopefully realize that this is the best way for them to make money over the long term, but not necessarily in your interest. So, make sense? Okay, now.
So, like, how do you choose a...
Get a good referral. Get a very good referral, somebody you trust. Talk to people. Yeah, because you got... Get two or three referrals. Go look up FINRA. We'll show you FINRA, broker check. I'll show you that. See if there's any hanky-panky in their past. We'll do that. Remind me. We'll talk about FINRA later on. Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. But those people, they're not perfect either. Okay, so here we go, folks. Here's another mutual fund, very similar to the other one. It's a very good fund. It's been around for a long time. Alliance Large Cap Growth Fund. And notice they have the Class A, B, C, Class F shares. And what's the first thing we notice? The sales charge is lower, isn't it? 4.25% as opposed to 5.75%. But notice that the Class A shares have a management fee of 75 cents. 25 cents was the other one. 30 cents for the distribution fees, 24 cents for the accounting, $1.24. We're sure these guys are charging you 1.5% less to buy into the fund, but they're charging you an extra, 60 some cents every year in perpetuity. You see what the choices are? Okay, good. The Class B shares have a 4% as opposed to 5% maximum, and that goes down over 4 years. So Alliance goes down to B. The contingent deferred sales charge goes down quickly for Alliance, 4 years. But then again, they bump up the 12B1 fee to $1. So now we're looking at $2.03. Now we're getting close to what life insurance and banks charge you. You see, do banks have to tell you what they're charging you? Do life insurance companies have to tell you? No, they don't have the Investment Company Act of 1940 to deal with. But mutual funds have to charge you, have to show you. They have to tell you how much they're charging you in the prospectus, which you don't read. Which I don't blame you, because it's hard to read. The Class C shares have the 1% sales charge if you take the money out within 1 year, but you're not going to do that. And they have 2%. So that's $2 for every $100 every year, folks. And then the Class F shares, 99 cents. No upfront fee, no back-end fee, but the advisor tax on the wealth management fee on top of that. Here is another famous, now infamous, mutual fund, the Legg Mason Value Trust, which is now called the ClearBridge Value Trust. And we're going to discuss this mutual fund in a bit. We'll also discuss the gentleman who ran it for many years. His name still is, Bill Miller, but he doesn't run it anymore. They did not have A, C shares. They had what were called primary shares. But after the recent debacle, the recent financial turmoil 2008-09, when this fund just literally fell apart, they went to a more traditional model where brokers could sell A and the C shares. They used to sell the primary shares. But they weren't allowed to call them broker no-load funds anymore. So they went to the 5.75%, like the fundamental investors a couple slides ago, 68 cents for the management fee, 25 cents, 10 cents, $1.03, But these are relatively new. These are the ones that you bought 10 years ago, 20 years ago. They weren't called Class C. They were called primary shares. 95.95%, about 1%, if you take the money out within a year, which you're not going to do. 68 cents, boom, there goes the 12B1 fee up. 16 cents to $1.79. Now, these used to be able to be called broker no-load funds. But the Securities and Exchange Commission said, oh, all you're doing is hiding the load in the 12B1 fees. So you cannot call it a broker no-load fund if this is greater than 0.25%. So I'm cynical enough to just realize all you got to do is take that money out of here, put it up here, and you're done. You can still call it a no-load fund, right? Probably not. I'm sure they probably thought that sleazeballs in the industry would try to do that. So that's probably not allowed. So I don't know. I don't know, but it hasn't been done. Now, they also have the financial investment advisor at $1.07, and then they have institutional. How do you get those? Do you have to be institutionalized? Later. So, make sense? Are you getting the idea between A, B, C shares and the F shares? Good. Because now we're going to take a look at something completely different. I'm an old Monty Python fan. And now, excuse me. Excuse me. It hurts when I cough, though. This is an index fund. We'll discuss index funds in more detail on Thursday and probably Tuesday. This fund does no research. Remember the people in the top hats? They ain't there. You or I, if we can read a list of 500 stocks, and that's what it is, the list of 500 of the largest companies, mostly based in the United States, then we can run this fund. There's a name for that that I want you to learn. It is called passive management. See, the first three funds had people in the top hats going out and knocking on Ford's door and GMs and Toyotas and BMWs and deciding whether or not they were going to invest in those or maybe not, and then AT&T and Verizon. But this company doesn't do that. They simply look at the 500 stocks in the Standard & Poor's 500, which we'll discuss in detail when we get to Chapter 5, and they buy those stocks. And if they're not in that list, they don't buy them. Does that seem easy enough? Do you have to be a genius to do that? Oh, good. I'm glad. Okay. Just want to make sure because I got a lot of blank stares looking at me. Okay. These things have become uber, and that's the word these days, right? Uber populated. Populated. Uber popular. Super popular, right? Super. Uber came from super. Super came from Uber. And now you will hear people say that you should only invest in index funds. Whenever somebody says, a vast majority of people say, you should only invest in one thing, that's usually the worst time to do it. Doesn't mean it is, but when everybody runs a certain direction, you just know, okay, something's not going to go right. Yeah, something's going to go wrong. But notice, no upfront fee, no back-end fee. 15 cents. For a management fee. Pretty low, right? Better be. They're not doing anything. 2 cents. They'll hit you with a $20 fee if the account is less than $10,000. But if you sign up for electronic delivery, then they waive that. Not this waive. They forego the $10 fee. $20 fee. 2 cents here. So 17 cents. Much lower than all the others. It better be lower because they're not doing any work. They're simply looking up all the companies on that list and buying them. Make sense? Now, this was a novel idea back in the late, early 70s. The research came in the late 60s, early 70s. We'll discuss it later on, called the efficient market theories, the random walk theory, rational markets. And they weren't the only company. Vanguard wasn't the only company that did it, but they have certainly been the most popular. They have garnered the most success from that. For decades, Fidelity was the number one mutual fund company. Fidelity's based in Boston. Vanguard's based outside Philadelphia. And then in the 2000s, Vanguard overtook Fidelity as the number one mutual fund company. So what did Fidelity do? They say, if you can't beat them, join them. So they responded by eliminating all sales loads, creating their own index funds, and lowering their fees below Vanguard. Look, the Spartan 500 fund. You like that name, Spartan? No, you don't like that? Why? Because you're, you don't like USC? What? Okay, because the Spartans were sparse, right? They were abstemious. You like that word, abstemious? What does it mean? Cheap. You know, they didn't. You got the. You laid on the. You didn't have a bed. You laid on the floor. You had one blanket, and you didn't. They didn't wear jewelry or anything like that. So in other words, cheap, right? We're gonna emphasize inexpensive. No upfront fee. No back end fee. 2.5 cents. A $10-$12 fee if your account is below 2,000, unless you enroll in automatic purchases, and then we'll waive that. And 7 cents. So 9.5 cents. Does it remind you of limbo? How low can you go? And I have a cold, so I can talk low. Are you with me? You understand what's going on?
Yep.
Yeah? Yeah, so now the race is on to reduce index fees to the bare minimum. You're going to look at the thrift savings plan as part of your assignment. And you're going to find that they're even lower than these. That's the thrift savings plan. It's the federal employees 401k plan. All right. Now, in the, someone asked, how do you compare? Who is that? Who asked, how do you compare the different prices? In the prospectus, is required to, let's go back to the prospectus here. That's not it. Where's the prospectus? There it is. Here's the prospectus, not for fundamental investors, for Investment Company of America, which is the same company, American. Class A, B, C, there's the F1, F2. But then you see there are 529, and then there are retirement plans, and so we're not even looking at all of them. But here are the things that we looked at. We looked at the A, the B, the C. We looked at the F2. We ignored the F1 and the 529. That's for educational savings accounts. And we ignore the R shares because that's for retirement plans. But so that chart that we looked at for fundamental investors, for Alliance Large Cap Growth, for the other mutual funds, that's in the prospectus. And also how much you would spend on a $10,000 hypothetical 5% return over 1, 3, 5, and 10 years. So on Thursday, I forgot to bring it, I apologize. On Thursday, I'll bring a prospectus and I'll pass it around, but you can just download it from the web, from my website, or from any mutual fund websites. And this is what you're going to see. What we take a look at now is a hypothetical, meaning, you know, just make up, $10,000, as if everybody has $10,000 lying around the house. How many people have $10,000 lying around the house? Nobody in here?
$300 you can save all the time for 10 years.
No, this is not the $300 return. This is how much it's going to cost you.
Oh.
This is the fees. We'll take a look at the returns in a bit. So remembering that we had to pay that 5.75% for the A shares, so the A shares are more expensive to start with, aren't they? The B and the C shares, much less, and then we'll forget the F shares for now. After 3 years, the A shares are still more expensive. But after 5 years, we're finding that they're getting closer, aren't they? The B and the C are catching up. And after 10 years, which one costs the most? The B and the C shares wind up costing you more than the A shares. Now, the F shares look like the best deal, don't they? Notice what it says here? Excludes advisor fee. Given the typical 1 to 2% sales charge, that would add an additional $1,200 to $2,400 to the annual fee. Are you with me? Understand? So if you believe you need a broker, and you want to get a recommendation, which are the best shares for you, and you're in it for the long term, which are the best shares are for you?
A.
Everyone should say A. Wait till I ask you. What are the best shares for you if you believe you need a broker?
A.
If you're going to go it alone, do you want to buy a load fund? No. And then maybe the load funds with the extra one or two. No, it's still vital. I shouldn't denigrate an entire industry. Why shouldn't I? I belong to it. Okay. Now, the next one is the Legg Mason Value Trust. We're not going to show the Alliance Large Cap because it has a similar to these guys. But notice that the A shares, again, wind up being cheaper than the broker no load, which are not allowed to be called broker no load. The financial intermediary class doesn't include the $1,200 to $2,400 that the management fee is going to tack on there. The institutional class seemed to be the best deal. But how do you get those? Well, for starters, are you a large pension fund, a university endowment, a tax-exempt charity? And do you have at least $1 million to invest with us? Do we get the institutional shares? No. What do you think the industry is trying to tell you? Be big. Give us lots of money. Yes? A Mason? You have to be an institution. You have to be like the Southwestern College Foundation, which doles out scholarships to students, or St. Father Joe's Village, and they have an endowment. And so they want to invest it. You get the best deal. You get a really good deal. Some other actually, this is not the best deal I've seen. Other companies give private charities and the like and university endowments much better terms. I've seen other mutual funds that give them much better terms than this. This is not that great, actually. Legg Mason, they're based in Baltimore. Okay, now, the Vanguard 500 Index Fund. The fees for passively managed, you got your ABCDs? The fees for passively managed index funds will almost always be less than actively managed funds. The Admiral class that Vanguard started several years ago was available to people with a minimum of $100,000. Any takers? But now, a couple of years ago, well, actually 5 years ago, they lowered the minimum to $10,000. So look at the fees for the regular index 500, 17 cents for every $100. These guys are down to 5 cents. So instead of $1,000, $2,000, you're paying $217 or $64. And the same thing is true for funds that are called ETFs that we briefly discussed on Thursday and we'll discuss again this Thursday. They should have low annual operating expenses. Now, is that a guarantee? Everyone should say no. Is that a guarantee?
No.
Because the industry, what they will do, dear students, is they will try to sneak index funds into your 401k, into your 403b. And those index funds, because the brokers are not fiduciaries, do not have to have the best fees. You will walk into that 401k meeting, and you're the expert, and you're going to call out that jerk in the three-piece suit who's telling you how wonderful a job they're doing for you, and they've got the nationwide Standard & Poor's 500, S&P 500 index fund in there, which charges, instead of 17 cents or 5 cents, 90 cents on every $100. Now, remember, these people are doing no research. Now, who would do that to their employees? Southwestern Community College. And they didn't expect Yo Boy to be in the audience when I was there. What is this? It wasn't a nationwide yet. It was the Gartmore. This was 2002. And I said, what are you guys doing? This is horrible. Why don't you give us Vanguard or Fidelity or somebody who gives us a better deal? Oh, yeah, we're going to change. We're not going to stay with these. They went with their own one. They went with nationwide on your backside. And I keep telling the people in HR, don't you understand how they're screwing us? And they didn't understand. They don't know what the hell's going on. So finally, one of them took my class. And she goes, wow, we're really being screwed, aren't we? I said, yeah, we are. So I've told the superintendent president, I've told the vice president. Who the hell knows what's going on in the boardroom? I don't know. But they're screwing us, and they're going to try to screw you. And that's why you need to understand this. If in your 401k is an index fund that does not have as low as Fidelity or Vanguard, then you jump up and down and scream and holler and saying, we are being raped. Because that's what you're being raped. Bend over, here it comes again. But they need to pay for their big money wasters and Porsches and Lexus. Okay. All right. Now, we said that for most companies that charge a Class A upfront fee, actually all of them, as the money gets bigger, as your account accumulates or you put in more money, the percentage goes down. So for the fundamental investors, the first one we took a look at, it was 5.75%. Up to 25,000. Then it goes down to 5, up to 50,000, 4.5, 3.5, 2.5, 2, 1.5, until finally, after you've either accumulated $1 million or you've put in $1 million, you pay no sales charge. So the industry is trying to say, we like big, we like ultra net worth individuals. Now, when I heard this, I could not believe it. I was totally flabbergasted. And I would think, who would do this to their clients? Some brokers would fail to inform their clients of this sales charge breakpoint. Instead, as the client approached the breakpoint, the broker would advise them to start another fund with a different company. You see what the broker's trying to do?
Keep them at
the highest level. This is no longer allowed. You can be disciplined and you can lose your license for it. But when I heard that, I thought, who would do that to their clients? Brokers who need to... it's easy for me. I'm here. You know how hard it is to get rid of a professor here? It's almost impossible. We only got a handful that give us all a bad name. But you got to fondle the students without their permission. If you have their permission, fondle away, right? Finally, the UC systems are now... Have you noticed that in the news? The UC system is now forbidding their professors to have hanky-panky with their students. Not us. We can still have hanky-panky. You have to steal from the... I mean steal from the college. People steal from the college all the time. But I mean steal serious stuff. People drive away with something or other. So this is what goes on in the industry. And I can snipe at them because I got a daytime job. I'm doing all right. But it's what goes on. Now, here's the contingent deferred sales charge for the fundamental investors. 5 after 1 year, 2 years, 2 and 3, they'll charge you 4% if you take the money out, 3, 2, 1, and after 6 years, no back-end sales charge. But they're charging you annual operating expenses that are higher for 8 years. This type of contingent deferred sales charge is also very typical with life insurance annuities, except it doesn't start at 5 or 6 or 4%. It starts at 20 and 25%. Whatever I say about brokers, life insurance agents are even worse. So, and I'm a life insurance agent too, so I'll tell you at least that much at least. Okay, are you tired? Are you exhausted? Or just bored? Are you confused? Good. We've done our job. Because do you think the industry wants you to understand this? No. People know they're being charged. They just don't understand how. And when you try to explain it to them, they go, and then they don't want to know. Leave me alone. Leave me alone. I know you. I trust you. Okay. I try to explain it to them, and they go, which one do you think is the best? Okay. That's the one I'll pick. Okay. So, now that you know everything you need to know, not really, but everything you need to know for this class, about A shares, B shares, C shares, D shares, FLI shares, no load funds, I'm going to give you $10,000 10 years ago. Got your ABCDs? $10,000 10 years ago. Which one do you want? The Fundamental Investors Class A, because remember the Class A was the best deal, if we're going to go with that. The Alliance Large Cap Class A. The Legg Mason Value Trust Class C, because they didn't have the Class A shares. They only had the primary shares 10 years ago. or the index 500, the abstemious route. A, B, C, D. Which one do you want? A, D, D, A, D, D. So everybody's going between A and D, huh? Okay, well, how'd you do? You both did pretty darn good. Yeah. Both the two actively managed funds that we looked at did better, even after accounting for the upfront fee. But look at what happened to the Legg Mason Value Trust. Now, 10 years, not quite 10 years ago, at the height, was 2006, I think, is when they started to fall. If you had looked at this company right here, it was $37,000. Because Bill Miller beat the S&P 500 15 years in a row until 2006, when he didn't. And then 7 and 8, he just fell apart. And his whole portfolio just crashed and burned. Notice that the Vanguard Index 500 can't quite... An index fund won't match the index because the index doesn't have any fees. The index is just a list. An index fund will almost, depending on their fees, match the index. But it won't go better. But it won't go very worse. Whereas an actively managed fund can do better. It can do a whole lot worse. Are you with me? Understand? Fees are important, but they don't tell you the whole picture. When comparing mutual funds, you must look at many attributes, not the least of which are rates of return. In my humble opinion, 10 years is not even long enough. I like to look 20, 30, 50 years. And notice, these guys actually did better than those returns because of the upfront sales charge. If you had more money in, you would have done even better. If you had been, put in more than $25,000 or $50,000 or $100,000, you would have done even better. Questions, thoughts, ideas? Are you going to go over this again? Please, okay? Because it's tricky. I apologize. And I always debate within myself whether I should show this to the 121 students. And I do. I still do. And I think I don't know if I should. Because they do horribly on the exam. They don't even bother. Yes, I'm sorry, David.
So if your broker dies in 20 years, what happens to your money? I mean...
Your broker dies in 20 years? It's still your money, yeah.
change
to another broker? Wait a minute, I'm not sure I understand the question. If your broker dies in 20 years, your broker's dead, okay? But your account is still there. Somebody else will take over the account.
But
that's a good question. I can understand. In other words, what happens when you want to switch brokers? You don't have to wait until they die. At any day, you can walk up to another broker, sign a form, and they'll take over the account. You don't have to pull the money. If you want to pull the money from that mutual fund, you can. But they will just take over the account. They will become the broker of record. You don't have to sell. If you're happy with the mutual fund, but you're not happy with the broker anymore, you just transfer the assets to another broker. Because if you sell, then the IRS is going to say, okay, you owe us capital gains. But if you're happy with the investment, just transfer it to another broker. Not usually. Maybe, sometimes. The internet broker sometimes will charge you $50 or $100. But, Merrill Stench did it one time, too. I'm sorry, Merrill Lynch. So they might charge you $50 because it's accounting. It's work for them. Okay, now, these are checking for comprehension questions, and they are also similar to the types of questions you will see on the exam. So it kills two birds with one stone. See if people are understanding what's going on, plus you get an example of what you'll see on the exam, so you kind of feel what my questions are like. So these shares do not have an upfront sales load. Instead, they assess a decreasing back-end load if you withdraw your money within 6 years. The annual operating expense is higher, courtesy of the 12B1 fees. Back-end load, are they A, B, C, F, or I? Right, they're B. Don't worry about being wrong. It's A, B, C, D. Just jump it up.
Yes, they normally eventually become A shares after 6, 4, 6, 8 years, depending on the company. These shares do not have an upfront fee and only a 1% back-end fee if redeemed within 1 year. The advisor called them no load, but you notice that the annual operating expense is higher than other share classes, again, courtesy of the ubiquitous 12B1 fees. 1% back-end fee, no load, A, B, C, or F, or I shares. A little tricky. These are the C shares. The F shares do not have the back-end load, right? Okay. And they're not allowed to call them no load. They're not supposed to call them no load anymore. So be careful. Some of the older advisors will. Your financial advisor tells you that these shares have no sales fee, a very low annual operating expense. She mumbles something about wealth management. These shares are A, B, C, F, or I. Right, these are the F or I shares. She also did her best not to explain to you that her brokerage firm will charge you an extra 2% each year, but she'll get a bottle of wine on your birthday, and that'll all make up for it. Okay, how are we doing? Okay? Yes? The TSP is an excellent 401k, and there are various reasons why. But I think the federal government could do a lot more to educate the members who are using it, because I get a lot of questions about the TSP. The guys down at Engels, mostly guys, at the border, because I go to TJ often, they know me now, because somebody was one of my students, and they know that I teach this. So they ask me, how am I doing? I still got the C shares, C fund. And some I and S, I say, yeah, just you're young, just hang tight. So it's a great program. The fees are ultra low. There are fewer choices. It turns out that when you give people dozens of choices, such as the Southwestern College, and on the website, you'll see my comparison. You'll see my rant and rave about the Southwestern College 403B 457 plan. When you give people too many choices, they get the deer in the headlights stare. They don't know what to do. So they either do something really stupid, put all their money into aggressive, or all their money into, and we'll see that in a bit, all their money into very conservative, or worse, they don't do anything. They clam up. They don't know what to do. They get frightened. When you give people fewer choices, they're more easily able to make a decision. But I really do wish, to make that better, they did more education. The problem is they're afraid to do that because they're afraid of getting sued. Afraid of some lawyer filing a class action suit because you told me that I should go with this and then the market went down and I lost all this money and it's all your fault. Can't be my fault. Make sense? Did I answer your question? Okay, and by the way, that's part of your assignment. Well, I'll pass it out on Thursday, okay? Unless you want to stick around, and I'll pass it out then. Pass it out today. But now, we're going to start. Pass these out, please. Some of you have already seen this, so I apologize, those of you who have seen it already. This is called the Mutual Fund Scramble Sheet. And on the back is something we'll use in Chapter 5, so don't lose it, okay? And I have a 3-ring binder for those of you. Did you give one? Oh, yeah, got George one. Good, okay. Because what we're going to do is we're going to start. We're not going to finish today. We're going to finish on Thursday. We're going to start taking a look at the major categories of mutual funds. And, George, I'm going to be in your face here. I hope you don't mind. Okay.
Sorry.
That's all right. No, as long as you don't mind. I don't mind. I don't mind dancing around you. Okay. Because there are dozens and dozens of categories spanning the entire risk versus reward spectrum. Extras, thank you, David. And we can't learn all of them. I mean, you can if you want. If you want to do more research and find out the sub categories in that, go to Morningstar, go to Lipper, and educate yourself. But if you knew these, if you just know the ones I give you here, that's pretty darn good. You'll know more than 90-some% of people in the world. And what we're going to do by Thursday is we will have the entire whiteboard filled with what I call the mutual fund scramble sheet. And this was my attempt at giving it to the online students. Because in the face-to-face class, I build it on the board here. So I'm figuring you're taking notes. But the online students are, what do you do with that? So I made it and put it up on the board. And I thought, well, why don't I just give it to the face-to-face students? So we needed to print out a sheet of paper anyway. So there's another sheet of paper. And so what we're going to do is we're going to go from the... Oh, I forgot the other. I need my other... Excuse me. Who did it? Did I bring red? Yes. I need my colors. I went to see this doctor at the urgent care on Monday, and I thought they were going to give me really grief about, because I was in a lot of pain. I was coughing, and every time I coughed, it felt like someone was stabbing me and hitting me with a baseball bat at the same time on my chest. And I thought they were not going to give me any painkillers, not going to give me any serious cough medicine. And he took a couple of looks at me, poked around, and said, I'm going to give you, what's with Narco it's called? Narco? It's Vicodin. Vicodin. Boy, that's good. I don't like to get drunk. I don't like caffeine. I don't like pot. I don't like any of that stuff. But I like this. But I'm off it. I don't need it anymore. I don't need it. I can see how people could become very addicted to that. It makes you feel very fine. And he gave me this really strong cough syrup and an antibiotic because he said, you might have a bacterial infection. I don't think of a virus. And he said, and you should take the rest of the week off. Don't you dare go to work. And I just looked at him. And my wife looked at me like, you're not going to do this. He's going to go to work. And the doctor looked at me like, okay, I'll write you a note. I said, no problem. Oh, well. All right, aggressive growth. In almost every mutual fund company's lineup, there will be aggressive growth funds. And these funds, folks, are the riskiest of the stock funds. Actually, there's usually one or two categories above this. You may see something called ultra or pro or momentum. Momentum. I can spell momentum. That are one or two categories above these aggressive growth funds. And we'll discuss aggressive growth strategies, buying and selling, trying to get eye-popping returns. Folks, they're rolling the dice. Now, I have a little analogy that I use. I don't know if it works. If it does, great. If not, it doesn't. But I like to think of a buffet. A buffet. When you go to a buffet and you load up your plate, do you fill up your plate with jalapeno peppers? No, my son does. Most people don't, right? And that's what this is. It's the spice. It's the cayenne pepper. If you are so inclined, go ahead, put a little bit. Now, it's going to be a little tricky here. Put a little bit of your money, 5, 10% of your 401k or your Roth IRA or whatever your regular account is, put it into aggressive growth funds. But realize that these things are going to be very volatile. What's the euphemism for volatile? What does it mean? You're going to lose a lot of money. Risky. So if you're willing to stomach the volatility, go right ahead. But don't load up your whole plate on it. Hey, it's your money. If that's what you want to do, fine. But what I find is that people who know nothing about investing, they look at all the choices, they look at the one that's done the best over 10, 20 years, and it happens to be an aggressive growth fund, and they put everything into that fund. And then what happens when it falls 40%, 50%? What do? They take it out at the very worst time. That's the time to put more in, if you're willing to stomach the volatility.
So if that ever happens, the best bet is just to leave it and wait for it to go back up?
If you have the time and the stomach to do so, yeah, if that happens to you, it's going to happen to you.
Some people will pull it out.
Most people will pull it out because they're not emotionally ready for that kick in the stomach. Ask people who've lived through 2000 to 2002, 2008, 2009. It feels like being whacked over the head. Or mostly it's in the gut. People will tell you it hits them in the gut. They feel sick to their stomach because their $10,000 became $6,000 or $4,000. And the joke was your 401k became a 201k. I think it's cute. So put a little bit here, right? Put a little bit there. But for the most part, don't put everything in there. The next category are growth funds. Growth funds are interested in stocks that are growing, yes, but they're not necessarily buying and selling and buying and selling with huge, turnover rates. They're willing to hold on, but they're dealing in growth stocks, so they're going to be risky. Now, here's where it starts to get a little funky here. Next, where's the next? Where's my pocket? No. Capital appreciation funds. And what I did on the scramble sheet is you'll see that I wrote capital appreciation around it's hard to do an N upside down, around the categories of aggressive growth and growth funds. Why did I do that? Well, because they're not really the same. Capital appreciation funds tend to be much more flexible. They are lumped together with growth funds. They are lumped together with aggressive growth funds. But a growth fund in the prospectus will say, we strive to be fully invested in growth stocks, or we will have at least 80% of the portfolio in stocks that are considered growth stocks. But a capital appreciation fund is saying, look, all we're interested in is growing the capital, meaning making money. So that if we see companies that are not necessarily growth companies, that are out of favor with the rest of the market, maybe they're a food company or a railroad, we'll buy it. So they tend to paint with a broad brush. I don't know if that analogy helps. Flexibility. Are you with me? The problem is, without looking deep into the portfolio and reading what they have to say about the fund, you don't necessarily know how different that growth fund is from that capital appreciation fund. Some of them are very, very volatile, like aggressive growth and growth funds. Some not. And we're going to discuss Peter Lynch later on, a very famous investor. He wrote The One Up on Wall Street, which is an excellent book for those of you. Lily, did you finish it? What'd you think?
I liked
it.
Very simple.
Yes, he's a master. He's a master at making things that are typically difficult for people to understand. And he ran the Fidelity Magellan Fund from 1977 to 1989 and racked up 29% a year. And it just fit him like a glove. It is a capital appreciation fund, which meant he could buy whatever stocks he wanted to. He wasn't just limited to a certain type of stock. And it turned out he was just really good at picking individual stocks, whether they be growth stocks or defensive or utilities or whatever. And so I'm a big fan of well-run capital appreciation funds because they tend to be more flexible than growth funds. Make sense? See what you're up against? Okay, good. I'm not trying to confuse you folks, but this is what's out there, and you have to be able to understand the differences. Now, the next category is my personal favorite. And if I ever asked you on an exam, which fund would you recommend to somebody or which fund would you buy, if you choose growth and income, you will make your professor very happy. This is the pasta. Okay, here's the spice. We're hearing the spice. But here's the meat and potatoes, right, the entree. This is what you should have 40, 50% or more of your plate. If you're into stocks, you know, growth and income. Because, yes, we want companies that are growing, but we also want income. What is income from stocks? dividends. So why don't they call them growth and dividends funds? Or capital gains and dividends funds? I don't know, they don't. They call them growth and income. And these funds will participate in market downturns, don't worry, but they will be far less volatile than their growth, aggressive growth and capital appreciation cousins because they have that income dividend. Dividends are always a positive. They can't take money away from you. Now, dividends, you know, over the long term might not sound that appealing. You want growth, but we're going to find that they're very, very, dividends don't lie, folks. Dividends are money in your pocket. We like dividends. Questions? Okay. Now, the last, I'm sorry. Well, that's capital gains.
What about equity?
Equity income, hang on a minute, this is the next one. We're going to the next one. Now, the last category that we'll discuss for stocks is called equity income in this risk versus return, riskiest to the least riskiest. Most riskiest to the least riskiest. Okay, equity income. Now, why did they call it equity income? I know why. Equity means stocks. That's the industry word for stocks. Income from stocks is?
Dividends.
Everyone should say dividends. Income from stocks is?
Dividends.
So why don't they call them stock dividend funds? They don't. They call them equity income funds, and you're supposed to know that. Okay, so if this is the spice, this is the pasta, what's equity income? Oatmeal. Is oatmeal exciting? No. But is it good for you? Yeah. Will it give you heartburn?
Nope.
Well, maybe if you put the cayenne pepper on it. No, look what it does for horses. You know, horses are big, beautiful animals, and people say they got to eat meat. No, they don't eat meat. They don't. Who else are vegetarian? Elephants, right? Elephants are vegetarians. And so this mutual fund, this type of mutual fund, still invests in stocks, so it's going to go down when the market goes down. But instead of going down 50, 60, 70%, instead of going down 40, 30, 40%, it'll go down 30%. And that's a big difference. Questions, thoughts? Okay, good. I hope I'm not boring you, but I'm trying to get through this without falling down. All right, so now. Well, stocks give us rewards in two different ways. Capital gains, which most people use the term growth, and they give us returns in dividend, and many people use the term income. So when you see growth, you know they're talking about the price going up. When you see income with regard to stocks, they're talking about dividends. Now, these two sometimes will, especially this, will buy bonds sometimes to augment the income when they find that dividends are not very good. They're not giving you enough dividend income. They will buy bonds. But typically these are stock funds. And they will participate in the downturn of stocks. Okay? All right. It's going to get worse. Because what happens... Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, there we go. Here's the slide for equity income. What do they invest in? Railroads, foods, utilities, REITs. Are they exciting companies? Railroads? No. But they're the backbone of a modern economy, right? So are they going to go anywhere?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they go back and bring it. Are people going to be watching Titter and Farcebook in 30 years? I don't know. But I know there's going to be railroads taking stuff back and forth, right? Maybe they won't even be drivers. There won't be a driver on them. Many equity income funds did very well during the 2000 to 2000 and bear market, after lagging the market badly during the late 1990s. Why? Because these were the old economy stocks, the boring, stodgy stocks. Nobody wanted it. Everybody wanted AOL, Time Warner, and CMGI, and eBay. Yeah. And then food companies looked really good in 2000 to 2002. What happened in 2008? Everybody got clobbered. Now, these guys went down 30%. We'll see that on Thursday. We'll see that. Where these guys went down 35, 40, 50, 60%. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to overlay two more categories. We're going to overlay the what's called capitalization, and we'll discuss that in detail in the next chapter. Is it a large company, a mid-sized company, or a small company? And we use the term cap. Nothing to do with baseball caps. And then we're going to overlay the domesticity. Where is the company based? Is it a domestic company based in the United States? Is it a global company based anywhere in the world? Or is it an international, meaning it's based outside the United States, also called foreign? So there will be mutual funds that will be geared toward large cap companies, mid cap companies, small cap companies. Mutual funds that are geared toward domestic companies or global, all around the world, or outside the United States. Now, which do you think is riskiest here? Small companies are the riskiest. They're the most volatile. Large companies have their roots deep in the economy. They're going to go down when the market goes down, but small companies get clobbered. When the market comes back, who does better? The small companies. Because they got hammered down so quick. They got hammered down so much that when things turn back up, they tend to do really well. And they're more nimble. They can change to changing environments. So large companies do well when things go badly. Small companies do well when things get better. But large, don't worry, large caps. I'm not a big fan of small caps for most people. I have a little bit of small caps. But I don't recommend it because it's very volatile. And we saw the numbers for small cap. Didn't it look really hot and exciting? That's what you want? Until you watch it go down 70%. It's not fun. And then over here, what do you think is the most least riskiest, the most riskiest?
Global.
Well, traditionally, the least risky was domestic. And the most risky was international and you know, global was somewhere in between. That is no longer the case. It is just not the case where the risk is outside the United States and it's more risky. Some people will tell you that's the truth. It is not the truth anymore because the world is global. Many companies that are based here in the United States make more money outside the United States. Have you ever heard of Microsoft and Apple? And Coca-Cola, and Caterpillar, and GE, all the big name companies, Walmart, they understand that the world is global. They now are global enterprises. And there are companies outside the United States that do a large percentage, if not a vast majority, of their business inside the United States. And there's one company, we happen to own it, that is based in the United States, that doesn't sell a product at all in the United States. It sells it all international. That's Philip Morris International. Even though it's based in the United States, it does all its business outside the United States. So this, the risk is outside the United States, and the risk, it's not true anymore. And so because of these categories, what has happened in the industry? We have seen an explosion of different mutual funds. Because companies are trying to compete with one another, so they want to offer more choices because they think more choices are better. That's something that not uniquely American, but very American. I mean, United Staters. I have a story about that. What do I got here? Let's take a look at that. What do I got here? A domestic small cap aggressive growth fund. Pick one from column A, one from column B, and one from column C. Or it's a growth, start at the bottom. A global large cap growth fund. You see what's happened?
Anybody taking statistics? Statistics? And you remember permutations and combinations? What happens when you take three things, nine at a time, you know, how many different combinations, permutations that you have? And this is what's happened in the industry. That's why we have 10,000 different mutual funds. Because there are just so many different categories. And if one company comes out with a domestic, small cap, aggressive growth fund, then all the others have to come out with it. Now, some of the companies have said, no, we're not going to do that. But not too many. Many of them have now have dozens and dozens of funds. Questions, thoughts, ideas, comments, criticisms?
So you're saying it's all the same now. The risk is between the global.
Well, it's just not as pronounced as it used to be because the markets are much more coordinated, but they still move in cycles. For example, right now the United States is the king of the hill. The United States markets are doing better than outside the United States. But if you go over the long period of time, we saw who the better markets, right? It was Sweden was the best out of the developed markets. You look at the developing markets, and they have been on a tear for 30 years, but the last couple of years they've been lagging. So the truth is that you just can't say, oh, domestic companies are much less risky than in foreign companies. It's just the distinction is too blurred. But there will be people who would tell you that you should only invest in the United States. We have much better laws, much better accounting. That's not necessarily true. Some countries have better accounting than we do. But we do have a good legal system. Don't ask the lawyers. And so, and you're buying companies that are global anyway, so just stick with the United States. John Bogle, who started Vanguard, is a big proponent of that. I think he's wrong. I like some global companies, but that's why there's chocolate and vanilla. So, what do you think, folks? You're going to study these? Because I really do want you to know these categories. When you look inside the book, or you go on Morningstar, or Lipper, or in the library, or Wall Street Journal, you're going to see that there are dozens more categories. A few dozen more categories. On Thursday, we will start from here and continue with bond funds, balance, money market, all the other different types of funds, and then take a look at some companies and real funds. So thank you very much for your time. Study hard. Bring honor and glory to Southwestern Community College. If you were here late, come up and see me and tell me